stage dramas present The Drink of Death. This week's front page drama, The Drink of Death, is a radio dramatization of the true life story, Died Like the Victim in a Mystery Novel, which appears in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world, which comes to you at no extra cost as part of your Hearst Sunday newspaper. The opening scene for our radio drama, The Drink of Death, is set in the cozy living room of Mr. Fred Newton. Mr. Newton is the rental agent and superintendent of a block of residential apartments and professional offices near St. Paul's Cathedral in the heart of Old London, England. Mr. and Mrs. Newton have been entertaining a few guests at tea.
Oh, dear. Look at my lovely tablecloth, all peace-sized. Why, this silver teapot still leaks. Annie, you're a fine one, I must say. You spend the entire afternoon mucking up my kitchen with soldering irons and smelly old chemicals, mending my silver teapot, and now it leaks more than ever.
Oh, dearie, I can't see how it could. I filled it twice after I mended it. It didn't leak a bit. Let me have a look at it.
Hey, hold on, there, let me have a look. Oh, blimey, no wonder it still leaks, Rose. Your handyman Harry mended the wrong pot.
I say, half a more, let me see. Why, no, this isn't the pot I mended at all.
Oh, blimey, there's a pretty hard to do. Him, a certified civil engineer, and he can't tell a pot from a hole in it from a good one.
Now, wait a minute. Tackle with him to mend the roof of St. Paul's. Never mind a pinhole in a teapot. If you ask me, I think it's all a blind. He just likes to potter around so he can be close to your missus, Fred. He's a bit soft on her.
Albert, how can you cite such things? Harry's a very nice, obliging chap, even if he can't mend a teapot.
No, excuse me, everybody. I'll be back in a jiffy. I've got to take my medicine. My stomach's getting up.
There's your old man and his stomach. I think it more to take a nip at the whiskey than anything else.
Albert Bobbs, you've got a nasty mind. You know my Fred never takes a drop of strong drink, except for medicinal purposes.
Medicinal purposes, my blushing aunt, funny. He takes to the bottle like a baby.
No, I don't think that's a bit nice, Albert. Chaffing poor Rose because her old man's a bit off his
feet. Albert, come here quick.
Oh, say, Fred, what's up? Sounds like Fred's in trouble. Come in, Fred, I'll be right in there.
Albert, help, Albert.
Blimey, what's happened, Fred? Have you got a spare? What's that? What are you pointing at?
That bottle on the table. What's the matter with that whiskey?
What? The whiskey? Hold on, Fred. I'll taste it. Did it upset you?
It's salty and burns your tongue.
Hey, Rose, Harry, come in here quick. Something's wrong. Lie still there, Fred, while I go to the bathroom and rinse my mouth out.
What is it? Wait, my friend, what's up? Are you ill,
Fred? Just his stomach upset, I suppose. Where's Albert? Where did he go, Fred?
Yeah, why, Fred, I'll sit down beside you. Now tell me, what's up?
How is it now, Fred? How is it?
Worse, Albert, worse. I'm burning up inside.
Look here now, this is serious. Who's been messing with Fred's whiskey? Was it you, Harry? It's a pretty poor joke, whoever done it.
I didn't do anything with this whiskey. What's the matter with it?
Take a look at it. Pour some out, but don't drink any.
Yeah, don't worry, I won't. I'll pour some in my hand. Why, look it. It's turning a dark brown. That's funny. Burns me a little bit, too.
Oh, it's killing me. I'm on fire.
Lord, Milfred, I'm off to call a doctor now. You two watch him. I'll run down the street and get Dr. Benson.
Oh, my stomach's on fire. It's burning. Help me. Help me. Oh, please, water. Water.
Shall I get him a drink, Rose?
No, we don't know what water to drink. Oh, go to the door, Harry. I'll stay here with Fred. Don't let anybody in.
Hello, McNeil. What do you want?
I heard Mr. Newton was ill. I came up to see if there was anything I could do. I was just past Mr. Bobbs on the stairs, and he told me to come up.
Oh, I suppose it's all right. Come in. He's in the bedroom.
Ah, well, Bobbs said it was Mr. Newton's stomach. Something he'd drunk from a bottle.
Aye, that's right. Oh, here, go in the bedroom.
Aye, all right. Something he drank from a bottle. Aye. Will, you know, I often bring Mr. Newton a wee dram in a bottle every day. I did only today. Have you still got that bottle?
Oh, yes, of course. Here it is. Is this the bottle you gave the governor?
Ah, that's it. There's nothing wrong with that whiskey. To prove it, I'll taste it.
No, don't touch it.
Oh, I'll just touch it with my tongue. Oh, great God, Mechty. That's acid in there.
Yeah, that's what I thought, acid. like I used in my work years ago.
It's queer how it got there. I'll have it analyzed.
No. Hand it over to me, Mac. I'll keep it for the doctor's examination. Dr. Benson should be here any minute now.
Ah, he's only just down the street, though.
Dr. Benson arrived and lost no time in rushing Mr. Newton to the hospital, where he died the next day. A suspicion of murder clouded the death, and Scotland Yard was called. Detectives agreed it looked like murder and began a thorough examination. They began at the Newton apartment and called in everyone concerned with Newton's death for questioning. They carefully went over all the happenings of the day prior to Newton's death and finally came to the doctor's evidence.
Yes, when I arrived, I found Mr. Newton in bed writhing in agony. Mrs. Newton was sitting at the head of the bed, and Mr. Harry Archer was walking around in a dressing gown.
It was almost an hour between the time Mr. Bobbs left the house to call for you until you arrived, eh, Doctor?
That's correct. I was making other calls.
I see. Well, continue, Doctor.
Shortly after my examination, I saw a light smile come over Mrs. Newton's face as she looked beyond me toward the foot of the bed. I glanced around and saw this Harry Archer standing behind me. Then Mrs. Newton told him he'd better go outside for the time being.
Oh, I see. And what would you say Mrs. Newton's attitude was during the examination and so forth?
Quite abnormal, I should say. She was so indifferent to the condition of her husband, she didn't even ask what he was suffering from.
That's unusual. And now, Doctor, is it true that Archer informed you Mrs. Newton had been sick also?
Quite correct. I examined her and found absolutely nothing wrong with her physically, although, as I've said, her mental attitude struck me as being most unusual.
One more question, Dr. Benson. You are positive that the poison Mr. Newton died from was identically the same that Mr. Harry Archer used in connection with the soldering equipment he used here to repair the silver teapot?
There can't be the slightest doubt about it, Inspector.
Thank you, Doctor. That is all I want to know. Mrs. Fred Newton and you, Mr. Harry Archer, are both under arrest. I charge you with the murder of Mr. Fred Newton, and I warn you that anything you may say will be used as evidence against you. Constable Simpson, do your duty. The rest of you people will appear at the Mansion House immediately and as material witnesses against these prisoners.
Immediately, the two prisoners, the widow of the murdered man and Harry Archer, whom friends had intimated was more than fond of Mrs. Newton, were arraigned before His Honor, the Lord Mayor of London. Incidentally, it was the first murder case to come up before the Lord Mayor in over 20 years. It is also of interest to add that since ancient times, the Lord Mayor of London has been the chief magistrate of a small part of the great metropolis known as Old London. The block of apartments where Mr. Newton drank the poisoned whiskey is in that part of the city. Wearing his ermine robe and jeweled chain of office, the Lord Mayor listened patiently to all the evidence.
Mr. Crown Prosecutor, barristers and gentlemen at the bar, I have heard all the evidence, which I might add is all circumstantial. I, for one, distrust circumstantial evidence. British justice, may I remind you, prides itself upon being as scrupulous in protecting the innocent as it does in punishing the guilty. Therefore, having weighed all the evidence most thoroughly, I must pronounce Mrs. Newton not guilty. Let us have absolute quiet and order, please. Mrs. Newton is to go free. As for the other defendant, Mr. Harry Archer, I regret that the evidence heard does not entirely clear him of suspicion of guilt. It was he who purchased the poison, had it in his possession on the day of Mr. Newton's death, and admits freely that he brought it into the Newton home, where in some manner it came into Mr. Newton's possession and being self-administered by Mr. Newton caused death. I must therefore commit Mr. Harry Archer to Old Bailey to stand trial by a jury of his peers.
With traditional British swiftness in matters of criminal law, Harry Archer was brought to trial at Old Bailey. With great thoroughness, the Crown Prosecutor, aided by his Scotland Yard detectives, built up a strong case against Harry Archer, and the final day of the trial was drawing to a close. The Crown Prosecutor was addressing the jury.
You have heard the evidence, gentlemen. There is no doubt in my mind this is one of the most ingenious murders to come before these courts in many a day. Here is a case that could be used as a pattern for one of those perfect crimes seldom encountered anywhere except in mystery novels. I ask you to consider the facts. Harry Archer knew Mr. Newton's habit of absenting himself from his guests on frequent occasions and taking small portions of diluted whiskey as an aid to a stomach ailment. Harry Archer took advantage of this. He deliberately brought the poison into Mr. Newton's home. He's admitted it on the pretext that he was using it to help in soldering a teapot. But as a matter of fact, he didn't take the trouble to ascertain the right teapot to mend. Furthermore, he didn't care. He just wanted a reason and an alibi for bringing the poison into Newton's home.
And for what motive? His infatuation for his house's attractive wife. Your witnesses have testified to that. The facts are clear. I ask you, gentlemen, for a verdict of guilty. That is all, my lord.
The jury is yours, Mr. Cardwell.
Thank you, my lord. Gentlemen of the jury, I will take but a moment of your time. My learned colleague, the Crown Prosecutor, has tried to fasten this most heinous crime on an innocent man, on nothing more substantial than neighborhood gossip or hearsay, which all of you know is a most vicious habit and has often caused great wrong to the innocent. The witnesses you have heard have all implied that Mr. Archer was fond of Mrs. Newton, the dead man's wife. Gentlemen, can any man be condemned upon such flimsy evidence as this? We are all fond of and attached to our friends' wives in the most proper manner. No one has been able to prove or suggest that there was anything improper in the relationship between Mrs. Newton and the defendant, Harry Archer. The Crown Prosecutor has told you that Harry Archer brought the poison into the house. This Mr. Archer readily admitted. But the Crown Prosecutor does not tell you how. Neither has he brought forth any witnesses who actually saw Mr. Archer put the poison into Mr. Newton's whiskey. How did it get there? Perhaps this simple but forthright explanation will clear up the matter. We have heard that Mr. Newton was in the habit of drinking diluted whiskey. Is it not entirely possible, gentlemen, that sometime after luncheon on the day of his death, Mr. Newton went into the kitchen when no one was there? On the table he saw a small dark bottle, the same type of bottle containing the mineral water with which he was in the habit of diluting his whiskey. Could he not have mistaken into thinking this was mineral water and poured it into his whiskey bottle? Mr. Archer has said that he used a small dark mineral water bottle in which he carried the poisonous soldering solution. The evidence heard places Mr. Harry Archer as working at the soldering job on the kitchen table. Being called to luncheon after he'd finished the job, he wrapped up his tools, placed them in his bag, and leaving the bottle of poisonous salt solution on the table. It was this bottle, gentlemen, that the dead man, Mr. Newton, picked up and used to dilute his whiskey. He carried this bottle of diluted whiskey back to the bedroom, and during the afternoon took the fatal drink that ended his life. Is this not just as plausible as the excuse that my learned friend, the Crown Prosecutor, has given? All the evidence in this case, gentlemen, has been purely circumstantial, and most of it was rejected in an earlier trial by His Honor, the Lord Mayor of London. Weigh these facts carefully, gentlemen. That is all, my lord. The defense rests its case.
Gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, my lord. We find the defendant, Harry Archer, not guilty.
Like the Lord Mayor of London, the British jury rejected the circumstantial evidence submitted in this case and were equally convinced of Harry Archer's innocence as the Lord Mayor was of Mrs. Newton's, and they released him too. Thus, what looked like a perfect murder case turned out to be an accident. A very unfortunate accident, and is now causing English jurists to wonder if circumstantial evidence is all that it is cracked up to be. You have just heard a radio dramatization entitled The Drink of Death, which is adapted from the story Died Like the Victim in a Mystery Novel, to be found in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine with the largest circulation in the world, distributed free with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Join the millions of Americans who each Sunday find the maximum of reading enjoyment in the entertaining, educational, and up-to-the-minute stories, articles, and feature fiction by the world's best writers found in every issue of the American Weekly, the magazine distributed each Sunday with your Hearst Sunday newspaper.